We can meet the moment with a full and open heart no matter what we are doing at the moment, or we can try to, which is just as good, metaphysically speaking. To each, my deepest sympathies for the inevitable suffering, and my deepest thanks for every effort that is made to create from this suffering the self-loved being, the ministry of essence, the open heart, the life of beauty and service. Blessings to all of us as we walk this fair but dusty highway together, and the light grows. It is a wonderful journey to be on, with marvelous companionship. 507, Chapter 14, The Main Mission, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, UO, transcript dated March 10, 1991, p. 2. Idem, transcript dated January 3, 1993, p. 8. 175, letter dated February 2, 1999. UO, transcript dated January 18, 1998, p. 3. Hatton, transcript dated August 13, 1984, pages 9-10. Law of One, Book 2, p. 131. Mary, letter dated April 21, 1997. Jonathan Boyne, letter dated August 10, 1997. 131, letter dated May 14, 1997. Mike Korinko, transcript dated August 14, 1995. UO, transcript dated March 23, 1997, pages 4-5. Idem. Transcript dated March 16, 1997, p. 2. Idem, transcript dated May 22, 1994, p. 2. Idem, transcript dated February 7, 1999, p. 2. Idem, transcript dated December 30, 1990, pages 4-5. Idem, transcript dated February 9, 1986, p. 6. Joseph R. Combe, letter dated August 20, 1998. Jean Jacobson, letter dated March 1, 1999. Karen Eck, letter dated June 11, 1999. UO, transcript dated May 22, 1994, p. 3. John M., letter dated August 3, 1999. Law of One, Book 3. Pages 107-108. UO, transcript dated March 13, 1988, pages 2-3. Idem, transcript dated September 15, 1996, p. 4. Heike Malaska, letter dated February 19, 1999. UO, transcript dated February 26, 1995, p. 6. Idem, transcript dated April 7, 1991, p. 5. Idem, transcript dated October 22, 1995, p. 5. Idem, transcript dated January 19, 1997, p. 3. Idem, transcript dated March 27, 1991, p. 7. Idem, transcript dated July 12, 1992. Pages 2-3. Idem, transcript dated March 31, 1991, p. 2. Idem, transcript dated March 15, 1998, p. 2. Idem, transcript dated August 22, 1993, p. 3. Transcript dated November 1, 1992, p. 6. 508, Chapter 14. The Main Mission 36 37 38 39 40 41 42 43 44 45 46 47, idem, transcript dated March 31, 1991, p. 3. Idem, transcript dated March 19, 1995, p. 2. Idem, transcript dated October 6, 1996, p. 3. Idem, transcript dated July 12, based on faith instead of fear, desire, will and hope instead of details, fires and personalities. The first vocation of each of you, by your very nature, is the vocation of living a life of devotion and faith. In this way, the deepest portion of your true nature is also the basic portion of the outer experience. When this attitude of mind, this bias or prejudice, shall we say, is realized within as a true desire, that which is within you of love has, for the first time, a voice. That voice is a voice which speaks in silence. 1. The silent witness of a life lived by faith seems something that would not show itself to the world. Often, it does not, in any obvious way. But the gift of each day's living of such a life is inestimable. It is never an easy thing for us to move beyond the outer setting and strew you of a difficult situation. 511, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life and Find the Asp of It, in which the sacred nature of existence and the open-hearted love of our essential self can work its magic upon the outer bayer. It requires a dedication of the self, a resolve of will, a persistence of effort, a choice, in short, to claim a degree of mastery over the outer world. An attitude is only one word, yet this attitude is the key to the spiritual devotional life, for all things are sacred to the one who has the eyes to see, the ears to hear and the heart to understand. 2. The model for the devotional life used to be retreat. Even as recently as 5 years ago, I was still finding the time to go into spiritual retreat once a year. It was a rush to clear the weekend, but I felt it to be worth it to stop completely and rest in spirit for just a few days. However, our group retreat died for lack of attendees. Even though some few people in transition and inspiration find the time still for all sorts of transformative workshops, in the usual run of things we are simply too overladen with Atlas load to shrug it off and go into retreat for the weekend. We shall have to do this retreating without retreat, in the context of our everyday life. This means that if we choose to live a devotional life, we will be living a multi-layered existence. It is the burden and the glory of those who do live a religious, spiritual or devotional life to live on two levels at once, for the level of the outer world is, indeed, the either, or of service to self or service to others, and the dynamics of that life are unforgiving. Yet still, within these outer appearances lies an inner reality which only the heart of humankind can know or experience. 3. I trust that we are aware of how tricky a bogey this two-layered living is. Remaining aware of the salient outer details and fun-ioning competently on that level, and at the same time living by spiritual and ethical principles and the invocation on a constant basis of open-hearted love's clear path through our energy system, is most subtle work. Seeing others as souls when they are such efficient mirrors for catalytica ion is a powerfully difficult challenge. Because one needs to live that which one has learned, it is most often the case that the one who too quickly undertakes the higher spiritual, almost discarnate skills of devotion, may well have been leaving behind a neglected body, an unloved body, and without the knowledge to do any other, the niggle of the spirit child within, which was born in each entity when each entity first chose to seek the truth with all of his heart. 4. 512, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life. This willingness to heal and accept our child within is essential if we wish to release ourselves into the open heart in a safe and confident way. If we think of the spiritual self within as being born when we awaken within incarnation to our spiritual identity, and gradually maturing as we work on ourselves, our attitudes and emotions, we can see that this inner spiritual child will need continuing help. Every time we get off balance because of the catalyst of living, we will be vulnerable to being pulled off our center of love within the open heart, and into the wilderness of the chaotic outer bayer. Then our insecurities will surface, letting us know just what work we do have to do right now with that inner child. Perhaps, in the rush of iron, we cannot make the time for this work at the exact moment we generate the situation and receive catalyst, but each day finally ends, and we can promise ourselves to riffle and work on what has occurred as we relax and get ready to rest for the night. As always, my chief recommendation in this regard is some regularized form of meditation, contemplation or prayer. We encourage each so to arrange the daily habits that the center of being is given respite and pride of place within the daily life. As always, we suggest a daily meditation, a turning in and out of season towards that infinity which is the unarticulated love of the one infinite creator. The challenge for each wanderer is to be able to dwell in this particular illusion, to enter fully into the processes of becoming a transformation yet remain at the center of being, consciously turning again and again to love itself. 5. The devotion inherent in the desire to turn to pure love is powerful, and I encourage us to hone that desire to rest in the open heart, at the same time that I caution us against becoming so focused upon our will and desire to serve and to love that we gain too great a sense of the goodness of our efforts and ourselves, and end up feeling prideful about our walk. This sets us up to defend the self. This is a very easy error to make. As long as you think that you have a self that you need to defend, you shall be working with spiritual pride, and so entities for the most part are working with this. No matter how persistently, purely and devotionally you have sought year after year, yet still there is the sense of, I am searching, I am looking, I am seeking to become the best that I can. Conversely, we have found that coming into a fuller awareness of self is really a process of subtraction, simplification and elimination of things from the defended self until finally the self is empty and the barriers are down. 6. 513, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life. In my own life, I have found this to be very true. Gradually, there is less that catches me in the net of contrition and fear. Little by little, I find myself listening as well as defending. One day, I would like to see all defenses gone, and the need only to love, accept and forgive. It is a goal I shall probably not meet within this incarnation, yet every tiny drop of fear and tightness that falls away from me feels so wonderfully light and roomy that the quest to let go of more draws me endlessly. Certainly, one key to allowing this gradual release from fear to take place is staying in the present moment. Yesterday's change is moving away behind you, tomorrow's change is not imagined. You need only focus upon the present moment as you perceive it. 7. Focusing upon the present moment is not encouraged in this society, and to begin to do so constitutes a major change in one's perceptual structure and priority of thought and catalyst awareness. For one thing, we are not encouraged to be this fastidious about our thoughts and motivations, but only about our irons. For another, we are taught to seek to reduce discomfort. Yet major changes constitute, for most people, enhanced levels of discomfort. Choosing to live devotionally will not simplify our lives in the sense of making them more comfortable, more joyful, yes, more peaceful, yes, but more comfortable, not at all. We will find ourselves transforming, if we live in the present moment and the open heart at all frequently, in many ways, on various levels, at accelerated rates. It is a complex phenomenon, and the process engenders continuing feelings of being athwart of the society and, often, of parts of ourselves. Each will be self-disappointed many times. We encourage each to consider that this, too, is a lovely portion of a process by which change within is achieved. Some things that were priorities will be lost, and as the heart and mind change their habits, that which is old and stale must fall away. This is perceived as painful. Consequently, what we are saying is that along with the flow of living life cooperatively with destiny, there is a continuing discomfort which comes from changing faster than other entities because that is what you wish to do. However, it is a simple choice to make for most who prefer being awake and in the conscious presence of the infinite to being those who are asleep in a dream within the dream of incarnation itself. And do not ask themselves to do aught except flow along the lines of the society. 8. For most wanderers, there is no hope of flowing along the lines of society. We have been unsuccessful, at least in part, at doing that. We have sometimes felt ourselves to be outsiders, our thoughts a little different from their. 514, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life. Rest of society. Our alienated mindset, whether because of ET origins or because of our awakening to our spiritual identity as Earth natives, takes us to a realm where being an unquestioning and unresisting member of our culture is not an option. I believe that for most of us, the choice to live devotionally, to move into the open heart and its processes, is our one good opportunity to develop an acceptable and bearable life on earth. Dedicating the self deciding to live a devotional life is an immense, life-changing commitment. In 1968, Don Elkins asked me to undertake to set up for him and run a household which was intended to be a spiritually based community of souls whose values and ideals coincided, and whose service seemed to be better offered as a group. At that time, I had a lucid dream in which Don, as captain of a canal boat, took me on board and asked me if I was sure I wished to be with him. "If you remain aboard this boat," he said in the dream, "you shall never see dry land again." I took this advice to heart, which was a good idea, since it was so utterly true. The degree to which we at L.L. Research have been able to move heavily into physical community has been variable. However, the ability to be a lighthouse and a spiritual community in the metaphysical sense, not implying physical nearness of the members, has moved from strength to strength as more and more people have become aware of and at home in our work. My life has changed completely since that first promise to Don. I regret not one whit of all of it. And it started with a conscious dedication of myself and everything I was to a life of faith and service. The continuing beyond confusion, beyond destruction, beyond the difficulties, is much likened to the tempering of the metal in a tool that gives it strength, burnishing it that it might shine brightly and continue in its service with a renewed strength because of the difficulty, confusion and so forth. Thus, as you see the difficulty in motivating yourself to complete your meditations, this in itself is likened to a meditation where the focus falters and moves from the one point so that it must again be returned with patience and love to that one point. As you continue to accept the difficult portions of your journey and of your prices, you will find that there is an underlying strength that you build. To persevere and persevere and persevere is perhaps the most common and at times difficult portion of any seeker's journey, yet to be, 515, chapter 15, the devotionally lived life aware that such is occurring within your own experience is an illustration of your own dedication upon another level. 9. I do not wish to sugarcoat this element of difficulty in dedicating the self to the great work, not either the first time, nor any time thereafter. Whether we are having trouble being faithful with meditations or with any other asp of our spiritual price, we will experience negative emotions. The dynamic common to most difficulties in dedicating the self to love is substantial frustration. Each catalyst, each experience, each event within your illusion has the ability to temper the heart of the seeker, shall we say, the will of the seeker, the faith of the seeker. There is within frustration an inevitable rededication of the self to seeking, for the temptation is to stop, to quit, to rest, to have done with it. 10. It is going against the grain of cultural thinking to see in frustration and trials the refining fire of a friendly and helpful force. Yet this way of seeing and validating the inevitable movements between the open heart and the defended heart is, in my opinion, hard as it may be at first. Those of you who say, however well or poorly you may proceed at each moment that you experience in a conscious fashion, you try, you give, you offer in every instance of opportunity, and although you shall not fully succeed at all times or even in a majority of your attempts, it is the perseverance, the dedication, the continual reminders that you see about you and that you give to yourself, then, that are the refining qualities of the fire of experience that is yours within your evolution, seeing but glimpses of the one, wishing to know more purely, sharing but partially, becoming weary with effort, pulling together the desire again and again and again. It is this desire that is your most honored ally upon this journey. 11. The dedication of the self, and the continuing affirmations of this choice of how to live, are indeed honored allies on this journey of love and service. Talking about one of the outer gifts, the latter, I say, what matters, my friends, is that in whatever service you are attempting to perform, there lies beneath the surface an inner dedication that is not a veneer which washes away with constant use nor is rubbed away with idle chatter and stray thoughts, but instead remains, a kind of inner lodestar. 12, 516, chapter 15, the devotionally lived life following this lodestar of dedication of self, we are brought safely into a way of thinking about our experiences and life that allows us the most generous amount of freedom in working with ourselves, our catalyst and our destiny. To me, it is very absorbing to look into the present moments as they pass, seeing the love within them, seeing the rifts and inconsistencies of thought, seeing the whole sprum of our spiritual price. It can make us over-earnest. We do not wish to unbalance your lives as you ponder the mysteries of service, for indeed very often the greatest service you can offer another is your own smile, your own light word, your own cheerful touch. Therefore, let your dedication be careful and deep. But do not forget to let the sunshine flow through all your thinking, and lighten it that your service may be pleasant and of good cheer. For it is with those about you that you shall wend your way as pilgrims. It is with those about you that the ever-changing present will come. Therefore, my friends, let your souls be merry and glad together, that in loving the one infinite Creator, you may love each other with the gentleness and forbearance requisite for each unique being in your life. 13. Forming a rule of life. When I was a child being taught in Episcopalian Sunday school, I encountered the monastic concept of having a rule of life, and was immediately drawn to it. The concept follows the obsolete meaning of the word, rule, as a way of life or behavior. It fired my imagination to think of my whole life as a piece of art, a tapestry that I could create out of myself, my choices, the way I lived my life. The most basic elements on the list for forming a rule were poverty, chastity and obedience. In addition, there were devotional choices, the number of church services attended, prayers said, altar visits kept and so on. The narrowness of these choices did not altogether appeal to me. But the general concept so fired my imagination and nature that I began what has been a lifelong search for and gradual immersion in a rule of life that satisfies me. Along the way, I came to feel that all the elements of my life are equally sacred. Consequently, I have learned to include every chore and duty that I have in this rule of life I keep for myself. Addressing the poverty issue, my solution was to choose not to work for a paycheck, but from love of the work. So far, this has been possible. I have no idea whether the future holds such pleasant pastures as the good work of my choice. If not, I shall work at what I can with joy in doing the job. 517, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life. Well, in terms of chastity, I determined, immediately upon being abandoned at the altar by my first love, no longer a virgin, that I would need to be creative with expressing the quality of chastity. My solution is the relative chastity and fidelity of a mated relationship. In my current marriage, my husband and I have been faithful to each other for 2 decades. It may be the times we live in, but this form of chastity seems to me to be a genuine one, expressing as it does the willingness to allow whatever comes within the relationship to be enough. Obedience is the most thorny issue of the three, I feel, for the question remains, to whom or to what is one to be obedient? For myself, I have chosen to obey my husband when there is a need to and a settled disagreement lies between us, and to obey my deepest heart's dictates and guidance in all else. Although I often experience a subjective feeling of failure at various portions of my efforts to serve and learn, I sense also that feeling of rest which a willingness to surrender to the highest point of view offers. Devotions or services are an element of many rules of life. My husband and I begin each day with a devotional offering. We have also created a program of meditative physical exercise for our noontide service, and we take the time to do our routine together, stretching, walking and exercising and sharing a bit of silence, every day. We end our days together by gently talking through our issues du jour and doing balance in work before closing with the Lord's Prayer at bedtime. Weekly, we open the house to meditation and channeling meetings throughout the school year. And on Sunday mornings, I attend weekly Christian worship services, and sing in the choir while Jim scours the house, following our peculiar rule, cleanliness is next to godliness. These prices are as pillars supporting our lives. We have, through our years together, created many small and carefully thought out patterns of work and play which fill our needs and make time for everything we are interested in doing. I think a rule of life is especially useful and efficient in this latter regard. Without a plan, we are likely to pick one good thing to do and do that. In doing this, however, we are perhaps missing a few other activities we really want to include. I portion out my time carefully, so much for my correspondence, so much for cooking and for reading my junky historical romances. In honor of doing this handbook, gardening has been laid to one side for the most part this year. I look forward to getting my hands back in the earth, but I would not have missed this adventure of writing and sharing during this year for the world. 518, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life. The planning of this schedule or rule of life is the work of many years for me, especially these last years from 1992 to the present. Certainly, I retained some aspects of my former rule of life after rehab. But many of my former habits were outdated and irrelevant. It was a delightful and freeing release, to be vertical at last, and to be getting stronger, but I found no immediately obvious, clear road ahead for myself. Attempts to work again as a librarian proved to me that I was, though much improved, still in too fragile a state of health to hold a job. This baffled all my worldly wisdom, which had pointed to my resuming some sort of professional work. Finally, it came to me that the heartfelt hopes I had of finishing L.L.Pro.S. were wonderful and worthy goals to accept as mine to do, at whatever rate of speed I could find to pursue them, along with all the happy chores of living a normal life. I had made the mistake of thinking that we must work at a job out in the world in order to be useful. Freed from this concept, I found my way into a schedule of daily correspondence, miscellaneous duties and writing, editing prose that has filled my heart with satisfaction and my imagination with light and life. Allowing the work that is mine to come to me has been a great experience. For the first 40 years of my life, I expected to work for a living and color paycheck, and I did that. Now, for a season, I have been able to work without a paycheck, and it has been an immense blessing to be able to pursue the work I have felt called to do. Most of all, as I work at arranging my way of living, I am looking for the touchstone of maintaining the small life,